Lately, concern about gas stoves has become a burning issue, both locally and nationally. Heated debates have occurred in Congress over the issue. And not long ago, the House of Representatives passed legislation to prevent the federal government from banning gas stoves. Of course, the government isn't actually banning gas stoves. However, New York recently became the first state to ban gas stoves from new buildings. And other states are working to do the same through building codes. The city of Los Angeles has also banned gas stoves in new construction. And the Consumer Product Safety Commission has now opened an inquiry into potential hazards of gas stove emissions. This, as recent research is telling us more about the dangers from those emissions. We try to shed a little light on the subject that has lit the fire of debate with politicians and consumers. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. This is Fox 11 News In Depth. And you may have noticed a lot of conflict recently over a household appliance we've all been taking for granted for decades. So why, you may wonder, is there all this fuss over gas ranges? Well, it has a lot to do with some recent research into the emissions from those ranges that are opening our eyes to the dangers that we may not have been aware of. Joining us to talk about some of that recent research is Yanai Saman Kashtan. He's a PhD candidate in Earth System Science at Stanford. And good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us, Yanai.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
All right. Well, you were the lead researcher on a study that was published in June on the impact of gas stoves. First of all, give us a little brief on this thing. Gas stoves can be dangerous to your health?
Yes, they can. So research now spanning several decades has mostly focused on emissions of a pollutant called nitrogen dioxide from gas stoves. And nitrogen dioxide is very well known now to cause childhood asthma and also other respiratory diseases like exacerbating COPD. This study that I led looked at a different pollutant, benzene, and we found that the combustion of both gas and propane in stoves actually can emit enough benzene to exceed health benchmarks indoors from various different gas scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 250 years old, and but I've had gas stoves around me since I was a little kid. You know, what you're saying is somewhat disturbing.
I think so. You know, when I started this research, I was sort of, you know, kind of unconvinced. I'd grown up with a gas stove and didn't really think we were going to find much, given that, you know, this is a consumer product that's in millions of homes. But, you know, the more I've done the research, the more concerned I've become. And now, frankly, I'm quite glad to be in an apartment with an electric stove.
So what got you started on this?
What got me started really was this was a project that my advisor was thinking might be worthwhile. We had some just anecdotal evidence that this might be an issue from benzene in particular. I had a background in chemistry, so I thought, why not? But I certainly didn't know what we would find starting out on it, and sort of only became increasingly compelled by it as the data came rolling in.
You know, I'm curious about something you've suggested, which is a correlation between stoves and secondhand smoke. The study, the gas cooking could be as bad as living with a cigarette smoker in terms of a cancer risk.
Yeah, so I want to be careful and nuanced about this. What we found is that in about a third of cases, using a burner on high for 45 minutes or having the oven on set to 350 for 45 minutes can raise benzene concentrations in kitchens to levels comparable with the high estimate of secondhand smoke. Now there are other things that are bad about secondhand smoke. There's other carcinogens there. There's also other toxic emissions from gas stoves that aren't necessarily present in as high quantities in tobacco smoke. But if we're talking about benzene, which is one of the most potent leukemogens out there, in about a third of cases, we were seeing concentrations that were comparable to the high level of secondhand smoke.
You know, I've got so many things I want to ask you, but as you're talking, my mind is going off to unintended consequences. So the companies that make these gas stoves, the gas companies that supply the gas for these gas stoves. If we start banning all this stuff, that's going to affect an awful lot of people, isn't it?
Certainly will. And it's important that, you know, as we try to transition, you know, off of say, gas stoves in the name of health, for instance, or in the name of climate, that we do so in a just and responsible manner that takes care of all of the people whose livelihoods depend on the industry. Absolutely.
I'm not exactly sure what the relationship is here, but you've talked about social justice and the inequities, as well as talking about the pollution that comes from these gas stoves.
I mean, it sort of comes down to physics. If you have a gas stove and you live in a smaller house, you're going to have less volume into which that pollution is diluted. And so you're going to be exposed to higher concentrations. So lower income folks with smaller houses, sort of all else held equal, are going to be exposed to higher concentrations. Plus, you know, if you can't afford to eat out as much, you might be cooking more. So that's another consideration. And also in a lot of places, like more polluted places in the Central Valley, for instance, we did a lot of work in Bakersfield. Passive ventilation isn't often as much of a possibility, because if you're living downstream of a lot of oil or big oil fields or big ag, you know, you can't always just open a window and get fresh air.
You know, I'm thinking about my kitchen, my gas stove. I have one. And I guess my question to you is, do you have one? And did you think about this stuff as you were cooking on your oven?
I grew up with a gas stove, didn't think about it twice. Only really started worrying about it starting this research. And now in grad school, I happen to live in an apartment with an electric stove. So I don't have one. For people who do have a gas stove, I would say, look, these pollutants that we're talking about at the levels that we're talking about are chronic cumulative health concerns, both for adults and for children, although particularly for children. So it's not like you have to like rush out and throw away your gas stove tonight or anything.
You got me thinking about it. but we only have a half a minute left. I want you to wrap this up with some thoughts about, you know, what we should do next. I mean, should people start being concerned about this sort of thing, panicking? You know, what do you want to tell them?
I certainly do not panic. As I said, it's a cumulative risk that builds over time. So you don't have to do anything today. But there are several concrete steps you can take. If you have a gas stove, certainly when it's time to replace a stove, you can consider getting an electric stove. In the meantime, make sure that if you have an outside venting hood, turn it on whenever you're cooking, even if what you're cooking isn't smoky. And also there are ways to electrify your cooking gradually. You can get inexpensive induction hobs that fit right over your stove, which reduce your reliance on the gas stove without eliminating it completely, air fryers, all that kind of stuff. So it's not all or nothing. There's a whole spectrum of opportunities to reduce your exposure.
All right, Yanat Kashan, good luck on your PhD, doctor-to-be, and thanks for joining
Thank
us.
You.
Sure do appreciate it. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, that's not the only indoor air pollution we need to worry about. We talk about that right after this. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. It may surprise you to know that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency does not currently have indoor air quality standards. Most people don't even think about their indoor air quality, and if they do, they may not realize many of the things that affect that indoor air. But joining us right now is a man who thinks a lot about it, Dr. Austin Perlmutter. He's a board-certified internal medicine physician and managing director at Big Bold Health. Doctor, good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Hal.
We've been talking a lot about these gas stoves and their impact on our health. The recent concern is the discovery of benzene emissions. So just how dangerous is benzene exposure and what can it do to us?
Well, benzene's kind of one of many things that we should be considering as it relates to air pollution. And I just want to make this point clear, because we often think about outdoor air pollution. We can see it. You can see the smog, you can see the wildfire smoke, but we spend 98% of our time indoors. So indoor air pollution is actually a much bigger deal for most people than outdoor air pollution. Now, when you think about indoor air pollution, or really air pollution on the whole, you're thinking about two different types of pollution. There are gases, things like benzene, that can float up into the air. And then there are tiny particles called PMs, or particulate matter. And there we're really worried about the very small ones. These are often called PM2.5s. And really the goal is to minimize our exposure to all forms of air pollution, but some may be more concerning than others. And what we've learned recently is, based on the study that we're talking about in this segment, benzene levels coming out of gas stoves may be much higher than what was anticipated. So I think a more holistic approach to paying attention to what we're inhaling is the goal, but certainly benzene is part of that conversation.
It's not just the gas stove, though, is it? Our indoor air is full of nasty stuff, right? So even my stage manager, I were just talking about this. Matt and I were talking about the idea that we have gas air conditioning and heating. And is that affected in any way? You're just lighting a pilot.
Yeah, well, really interesting research shows that even when our gas stoves are off, they are emitting a decent amount of gas that gets into the environment. And that's not great, because if you think about what is in natural gas, which is the most common source of fuel for gas stoves, it's a mix of a number of different gases, primarily methane. And you don't really want to be generating a ton of methane in your environment, because it's not something you necessarily want to inhale in large quantities. But what's maybe more important is that you're also being exposed to other, I guess, contaminants in that natural gas that are off-gassing. So before you even turn on the pilot light, there is definitely a consideration for a loss of gas that is coming out through that piping.
You know, I'm concerned about freaking people out. I mean, I'm starting to think I should wear my N95 mask inside my place. I mean, we don't need to have this kind of concern about it. It's just a thing we become aware of that we sort of need to take note of and do something about.
Right. I think that's true. I mean, there's such a tendency right now to politicize everything. And there's been a lot of kind of positioning around gas stoves and indoor air pollution. What I do think is true is that we need to be looking at what are all the variables that impact our health. And one of the big ones is what we inhale. So if you think about the quality of the air that you're breathing as a major variable that determines health outcomes, certainly it makes sense to pay attention to it. Just like we would talk about, it's important to pay attention to the food you eat. Turns out it's also important to pay attention to the air you breathe. And while it's interesting, it is kind of controversial to focus on gas stoves as the center point of this conversation, the truth of it is that's one variable. And it's certainly something we can look at. But the bigger question is, how can we improve the quality of the air that we're breathing in the places that we spend the most time, in this case, within our homes?
Our first guest was working on his PhD. You're a doctor, So my question is one that we were talking about with him, which is this notion that this kind of air that we're breathing is sort of like breathing secondhand smoke. Now, would you concur with that?
Yeah, well, having a chance to look at the study that was referenced, it is true that levels of benzene get to the levels that are consistent with what we might be exposed to in a smoking household. It's tempting to draw correlations between smoking cigarettes and indoor air pollution in that they are both sources of indoor air pollution. But what I think is really important to consider here is we all kind of know that smoking cigarettes is bad for our health, and that includes being exposed to secondhand smoke. But there are a number of hidden risks to our health, and I think that the air pollution generated from our stoves, from our gas stoves in particular, is a great example of this hidden source of air pollution. So it is definitely part of this conversation that we need to spend more time thinking about.
Indoor air pollution and outdoor air pollution are two very different things, right? And so what else pollutes our air indoors that we might be concerned about?
There are things beyond just gas stoves that influence our indoor air quality. Some of the ones that most people don't pay attention to are the things that they light or turn on because they smell good. So I recently mentioned that indoor incense is probably not a good idea because it is a major contributor to indoor air quality. Same with a lot of essential oil diffusers or anything that has an indoor kind of fragrance. These are all sources of indoor air pollution. Beyond this, we need to be thinking about our cleaning supplies. So it turns out that when we're vacuuming, sweeping up, that generates a number of different air pollutants. And so thinking about making sure we use higher quality vacuums and high quality filters, it's really important to make sure that we are not adding additional air pollution. And one other thing I'll just mention here is, for most people and most of the time, it's higher quality air outside of our homes than inside our homes. So there are some very simple steps we can be taking to improve our indoor air quality, the least of which tends to be to ventilate more. That includes opening windows, that includes using air purifiers within our homes, and that also includes using a hood if we have a gas stove.
All right, very good. We're going to keep you around for another segment. But coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we're going to be talking more about this entire issue and how we're causing problems in our bodies, emotions, and minds with things that we consume every single day. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. We're back with Dr. Austin Perlmutter. We've been talking a lot about things we accidentally ingest, like toxins in the air that can make us sick. But what about those things we deliberately consume? The foods, the beverages, the cigarettes, and more. So sometimes the things we consume every day can have an impact not only on our physical health, but our mental health as well, right? So let's talk to Dr. Perlmutter. Let's find out a little bit about this. What do you think about that question right there?
Well, Hal, I think you're dead on. You know, we need to be paying attention to everything that we consume because we know that what we consume has a direct impact on our health. And so that relates to what we consume in our diet, the food, the drinks that we consume. It also relates to what we consume through our eyes and through our ears. And as we've already mentioned, what we breathe. So we absolutely need to be paying attention to all of these things. And it's an incredible opportunity, I think, for most people to enhance and improve their health, because by making some small changes and choosing healthier options, we're able to reprogram our body from the inside out.
We're learning a lot more about what's called the gut brain. What is that connection? What can you tell us about the mechanism of our gut and what we eat and how that affects our general state of health?
There's absolutely incredible research over the last several decades that indicates that what happens in our GI tract or our gut has a direct impact on basically every aspect of our health. And one of the areas that this research is most profound and I think interesting to just about everyone is that what happens in our gut can influence our brain health, including our mental health and even our risk for dementia. So if you think about what is actually in your gut health right now, you've got tens of trillions of bacteria. And these bacteria have a major say in how you think and how you feel. But we have a major say in the health of these bacteria. Through the choices that we make each day, we are educating what's called the gut microbiome in a way, hopefully, that is good for our own overall and brain health.
Completely off the wall question, but is that why, you know, consuming probiotics is a good idea?
Yeah, there's been a lot of conversation recently about what we can do to improve our gut microbiome and our gut health. And one of the parts of this conversation is, should we be consuming bacteria, in this case, probiotics, that is what a probiotic is, in order to enhance our gut health? And there's some really interesting research coming out about specific types of bacteria. And in clinical research on humans, they've started to show a benefit to various aspects of health with certain types of bacteria that we consume. It is notable, though, that you can also consume bacteria in the form of fermented food. So sauerkraut and kimchi are kind of a natural form of consuming probiotics as well.
Yeah, we all know that junk food and sugar isn't really good for us, but it's so hard to stop. Are sweets actually an addiction?
Well, there's a lot of conversation around whether sweets and in particular sugar activates addiction circuits in the brain. And there's kind of a debate in academic circles as to whether it's a bona fide addiction or something else. But the bottom line is, we've all got a sweet tooth. We all have a preference for sweet. And the food industry loves to exploit this by adding sugar and sweeteners to just about everything. An interesting study came out showing that over 70% of the foods and beverages that you can purchase in the grocery store have added sweeteners. Now, I know what many people are thinking, which is, well, if I don't use sugar, can't I just use artificial sweeteners? Or can't I just use these alternative sweeteners? But what the research is telling us here is that those may not be all that good for our metabolic health. People still tend to gain weight, and they might be damaging to the gut microbiome. So it is a nuanced conversation, but I do think it is the case that most people benefit significantly from decreasing the added sugar in their diet.
And sometimes, and I know this may be sounding a little counterintuitive, but sometimes a little bit of alcohol is good for us.
Yeah, this is another area of controversy. And for the last couple of decades, there's been this conversation around a little bit of alcohol actually having a positive impact on our cardiovascular health. We know that the Mediterranean diet, which is actually one of the healthiest dietary patterns, sometimes allows for a glass of red wine. I think it's important to note that there is a difference depending on the type of alcohol. So a shot of whiskey is different from a glass of red wine, both in terms of what it does to our bodies immediately and in terms of the nutrients that come in those different forms of alcohol. Wine contains polyphenols, which we know are beneficial to overall and to gut health. But what I would say is, as somebody who researches the immune system and the brain, that the research is moving us towards the idea that alcohol probably is not going to come out on the positive end of the ledger for most people and most of the time. So I'm definitely saying that if you're not already drinking, it doesn't make sense to start drinking for the health benefits.
We only have 30 seconds. What's the best thing we can do?
I would say if you're going to do one thing today, it's to really focus on cutting back on added sugar and prioritizing real food for your overall health. Our world is increasingly set up in a way that unhealthy lifestyles have become normalized. And one of the best ways to kind of reclaim some agency over health is to eat real foods that have been minimally processed. So choosing foods that people have messed with the least.
All right. Dr. Austin Perlmutter, thanks so much for joining us. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll have more on Fox 11 News in depth right after this break. Don't go away. And finally, for an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.